Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, September the 13th. And as we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Well, the election is less than 60 days away. And well, there's a lot of stuff going on in the country. There's a book by Bob Woodward out there. There's a fire in California. There's several fires, actually, in California. Lots of cities are looking for a police chief, including here Dallas. And there's violence against the police. This is really becoming, I think, a national problem. So let's say hello to our friend Bill Katz. The weather here in Texas, not too bad, Bill. How is it in New York?
Actually, it's quite nice. We were out today and we're able to do some shopping. You know, as long as you stand 6 feet away from any product you want to buy and the product has a mask on it, you're allowed to buy it.
Well, that's a good way to do it, I guess. At least you can go out, which at one time you couldn't even go outside in New York. Bill, let me begin. As long as we're talking about New York, let me begin with this week, the 19th anniversary of 9/11. It brought back a lot of memories. And one thing that it brought back was Rudy Giuliani, and when he was the mayor of New York, and we saw a lot of Mr. Giuliani on television and a lot of questions about what he did or the job that he did. And I thought it was interesting to contrast, Mr. Giuliani with the guy you've got right now who's a real problem, Bill.
Well, he's more than a problem. He's a disaster. And he is a disaster that he created. He's a self-created disaster. But he is also a disaster created by the press, which once again has let us down in its basic function of reporting the news. The people of New York elected de Blasio for the first time, but I think about 18% of the vote when everything was counted. Mayoral elections in New York are usually dull affairs because, with very rare exception, the Democrat always wins. So a lot of people don't even bother to go out to vote. And they elected this guy. For the first term, he was bad, but he wasn't that bad. I mean, he wasn't terrible. He was, we had those of us who have to keep up on these things for our work knew that he was a Marxist or had been a Marxist or was a pseudo-Marxist or who dreamed of being a Marxist. I think his role model is probably a combination of Al Sharpton and Che Guevara. I think that is the group that he liked to deal with. But it was in the second term, especially once the pandemic started, that he really revealed his true colors as a hard leftist, really a clown, and mean, like most hard leftists, mean to people. He seemed to get a great deal of joy out of what's happening. Just today, a whole group of major business executives in New York appealed to him to finally get to work and start solving the problems in the city. Two problems they mentioned specifically were cleanliness and crime.
Right.
The city is which he took over from Mike Bloomberg, was an expensive city. It was too expensive for many people, but it was very clean and it was well policed. The police department wasn't free of flaws, but it was doing an excellent job of maintaining life.
Mm-hmm.
The reduction in the murder rate had been 80%. I mean, it had become one of the safest cities in America. Now it has degenerated into what it was in the 1980s. And the occupant of the Gracie Mansion, which is the mayor's house, I don't even know if he actually lives there, but doesn't seem to care. I mean, you go into the city. I was in the city actually for the first time Thursday night in months, and you see so many things that are closed. You see very few police cars. You see very few policemen. The police morale is so low that you wonder why the police would even bother. If they look at somebody the wrong way, they get in trouble. The criminal
right.
doesn't get in trouble. You have criminals out on the street, released for some humanitarian purpose that I can't understand. You have a rising crime rate, a dramatically rising crime rate, and the mayor doesn't seem to care. But people are leaving New York in droves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem
yes,
here
are.
Is that the people who are leaving are the people who can afford to leave. They can go somewhere else. Some of them have second homes. The biggest booming industry in New York right now is moving vans. You
mm-hmm.
can't even get a moving van.
Right.
I mean, maybe if you know a guy named Joe or Vinny,
right.
you know, who has a moving van. But if you have a moving van in New York right now, you and you've got a crew to man it, you'll make a lot of money.
That's right. What's interesting, Bill, you mentioned that de Blasio and was elected with, whatever percentage, 10%, whatever it was. That seems to be a pattern. I've been looking into this. That seems to be a pattern in many of these liberal cities, that they don't get huge turnouts, whether it's Minneapolis or Seattle or Portland. Not that many people vote. And I wonder if that's going to change now, because these cities are so messed up that you have to believe that some of the people who live in these cities, if you cannot see the damage that these local governments have done to New York City, Chicago, Seattle, Minneapolis, Portland, if you cannot see the damage, then you deserve what you have, Bill.
Well, I think they can see it. And, one of the interesting things is the underestimation of the black community. I'm not referring
yes.
to the activists. I'm talking to the average people. Even Al Sharpton, a man you don't usually associate with intellect, came out this week, and when he was asked about the defunding of the police, he immediately said, "Are you kidding?" And he referred to, I like his term, the latte liberals who came up with this idea. But he said, he said the guy in the street, which means in his case, of course, the black citizen, they don't want the police defunded. They may want the police improved, but they need that police protection. They want that police protection. It's only the pseudo intellectuals and the old lefties who want the police defunded, and they're teaching it to kids now in school that the police are evil, that they're there to hurt people, to bring back slavery. To bring back the Edsel automobile. I mean, whatever it is they're
right.
talking about. And now, certainly there are problematical police departments and there are problematical police officers. Not everyone is a gem. But overwhelmingly, they do a good job, an adequate job, in patrolling the streets and keeping people safer. That, I think, has been
right.
proved a million times. And the tragedy of what is happening now is that just as people are leaving the city of New York in droves, you're getting retirements in droves from both the police and fire departments. The fire
mm-hmm.
departments are also being attacked by the activists that there aren't enough people of color in the fire department, which may be true, that the firemen are afraid of being attacked if they go to a fire. So they're leaving also, and who's leaving? The most senior people, the people who are the most experienced. And they're going to leave departments in the hands of very young people. They're going to be demoralized. The prospect of a Biden administration appointing leftist judges who will look the other way at the criminal but scowl at the policeman. This is becoming a terrible, terrible situation. Now, last night, as you know, two police officers were shot and critically wounded in Los Angeles. Now, both presidential candidates have denounced the shooting. I mean, they actually got Biden to denounce it clearly, and without hesitation. But will anybody believe him, given what his party has become? It took him months to denounce the violence in the streets. And, there was a poll out today from Fox News that showed that Americans now I don't have the figures right in front of me, but I think it's either a majority or a plurality of Americans now believe that Black Lives Matter is more about violence than it is about protest. That
right.
is the dramatic change from a few months ago, and it shows the direction the people of the country are going. And
well,
I don't
Bill,
know
oh,
how
have...
much longer. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that. I mean, when, you know, Black Lives Matter has gone from being a slogan to what we saw last night. You were talking about Los Angeles. There's
yes.
a story. There's a story that some Black Lives Matter militants were actually in front of the hospital. You know, I guess
That's
cheering
right.
that these two police officers had been killed. Or not, I mean, seriously wounded. But there's also another poll too, and I thought that was the one you were going to bring up, Bill, when you mentioned the poll. That there's one that says that in the battleground states where it really matters, that more people think that Trump is going to be tougher on the police. I mean, on the
yeah.
criminals,
and
that Biden is going to be a little softer. But I, you know, we're looking for a police chief here in Dallas, and the lady who I thought had done a really nice job will be, you know, resigning effective November. Other places are looking for a police chief. You have this violence against the police. You really have to wonder, why would you want the police chief job? It's almost a no-win situation, like you were saying, with the morale of the police in New York. If you look at somebody the wrong way, you're a racist or whatever you are. And it's like, why, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know what, I can do something else without having to risk my life every day. Because, I know police officers at our church. There's a couple of them who are police officers. These are wonderful people. You get to know them on a personal basis, just wonderful people. And, you know, they know their life. They know that they can be shot at any given moment in a situation. But what we're watching now, Bill, is an effort to kill police officers. Somebody out there has been instructed to go out and kill police officers.
That's
and
right. Oh,
if
absolutely.
That doesn't, if that doesn't, if the American people do not rebel against that, and I guess you rebel by voting, I don't know where we're going. Because my, you know, just from talking to people, Bill, I think most people support the police. I support the police. Obviously, if there's a guy who gets out of control, you deal with it. But for the most part, people support the police, Bill.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, we are aware, as I said earlier, that there are bad police officers. There are individual incidents that must be prosecuted. Very few of them, by the way. Very few of them. There are interactions with the police that could be better handled. But overall, there has been a dramatic improvement in police service in the United States in the last 20 years, and partially as a result of, you know, well-placed complaints and a desire to serve the public better. But the idea that the police are the enemy or that the police must be restrained to the point where they can't do their job, I believe that in Portland this week, the crackpot mayor and the crackpot city manager, I think, is just as bad, decreed that no tear gas was to be used by the police. Tear gas is a humane device used to control crowds that are out of hand. It's far better than a gun, to be sure. Nobody
right.
ever dies in a tear gas usage, and yet they don't want it to be used. Well, what do they want? What do they want? I saw also today, by the way, I'm sure you, in fact, I think it was you who sent me the story that in Seattle, Amazon, which is,
yes.
I think, the biggest employer in Seattle, is reducing its presence in the city. And you can understand why. Who in the
Absolutely.
World would want offices in a city like that trying to attract good employees? What employee wants to go to work or go back from work at the end of the day in a city that is now ridden by crime and violence? So
absolutely. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, no, this is absolute, and this is the point that I do not understand, and it really makes you wonder what is the intelligence level of some of these city leaders. Because, you know, you can talk about social justice all you want. You can talk about George Floyd all you want. You can say, well, an officer shouldn't put his knee like that on a guy's neck. We can talk about that all day long. But the damage that has been done to these cities is unbelievable. You New York City is there for you to see the damage. But you look at Seattle, Minneapolis, these cities are going to require a tremendous amount of cleanup to bring them back. They don't have the money to do it because the taxpayers are moving out. Like, I mean, if Amazon decides to get out of Seattle, you might as well lock, you know, throw the city away, because that's the biggest employer there. Well, maybe not. I think Boeing is also a huge employer, but Amazon is huge and growing. And if they decide to, I think it's something having to do with a lease in their building or something,
yes,
that they're not going,
yeah,
to renew. I mean, if that happens, I think Seattle is in deep trouble. So the question I keep asking, I don't have an answer, but the question I keep asking is, the people who live in these cities, even the liberals who live in these cities, certainly the minorities who live in many of these inner cities, when they look at what they're watching out their window, I think many of them have got to say, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. Who's defending us when people behave like this, Bill?
I think you're absolutely right. And one of the mistakes I believe the press makes, among a whole list of mistakes that would take us 3 weeks to go through, is that they assume that because liberals are elected in this city, in a particular city, that all the people are so ultra-liberal on every subject that they'll go along with this stuff. That's not true at all. Rudy Giuliani was elected mayor in the city of New York, one of the most liberal cities in the United States, and they elected him again. And I think it could happen if the right candidate came along. But the fact of the matter is, people aren't that crazy. They may be liberal, but they're not completely crazy. They don't want to see their children accosted on the street. They don't want to see the schools become shooting galleries. They are liberal up to a point, and that point has been passed and run over in cities like Portland. It's interesting that when a poll was taken recently in Portland, it showed the mayor did not have very high approval. He has very low approval, even though he is a real liberal, and Oregon is run as a state by a real liberal. The fact of the matter is, when people see this violence, they will not turn against liberalism. They will turn against those liberals or leftists who have betrayed liberalism.
That's right. Well, you also have to look at many of these cities. I mean, in Chicago, for example, the buildings that were burning were not were not suburbs. I mean, they were in the inner city or the city itself.
Yes.
And the businesses that were burning, as happened in Minneapolis, and I'm sure in New York City to some extent, the businesses that were burning were businesses owned by minorities. And this is one of the mayor of Chicago, you may remember, Bill, she had a very nasty telephone conversation that was made public with some of the city councilmen and women, saying, you're crazy, you're driving businesses away, they're not coming back. Because I think the typical city councilman understands that you got to have business in the district, otherwise there's nothing in the district, Bill.
You know, the whole subject of city councils is interesting in and of itself. I think you're right in some cases. Some city council members in a city like Chicago in particular, where the machine is the machine, and the machine actually operates sometimes on behalf of people in the local areas. But there are other city councils in this country that seem to be out in Never Never Land. They remind me of some school boards that don't seem to have any understanding of children. And some of these city councils, for example, in Seattle and in Portland, have proved to be even more left-wing than the mayors. Now, why is that? That is that in certain cities, and it is true in certain districts of New York, the city council member, it comes from the local activist base. I mean, how many people vote in city council elections or even know who's running? So what happens in a situation like that, you know, power abhors a vacuum, and it comes in to fill it, is you get an individual who is just a left-wing political activist and far more left-wing than the constituency, but the constituency never realizes it. We have a new, in our area, a new congressman who is replacing Nita Lowey. Nita Lowey is a Democrat, but a sane one. I mean, she's a moderate Democrat. Mm-hmm. She's been in office many years, as performed admirably for a Democrat. I mean, I disagree with her on certain things, but no one could accuse her of being crazy. But the person who is replacing her is from the activist base, who has very little connection with a good part of the congressional district, and seems to have some very, very left-wing ideas. But if you go around my neighborhood and ask who the new congressman is, they don't even know his name.
Right.
I mean, that's what often happens. It is public indifference to the wheels of democracy that often create these situations.
Absolutely, and I think that it's so obvious in some of these cities. I mean, I don't know how anybody can look at what's happening in Portland and feel good about it. I mean, if you live in those districts, how can you possibly vote for the people who are tolerating this? One more thing I wanted to say, Bill, tying it back to 9/11. You know, one of the sad things, of course, at the moment is the way policemen are being treated and these campaigns against the police. And one of the great things about 9/11 was the way that the public reacted in admiration of what the police and the firemen did. And I mean, in New York, it was fantastic what they did.
Yes.
And it's kind of sad because many of these, and I'm going to use the word kids because they may not be kids, but they act like it. Many of these kids who are marching, some of them probably are not old enough to really remember 9/11. And old enough to remember the tremendous sacrifice that some of these policemen, and many losing their lives, and these firemen going into those buildings. I remember that, and everybody that I know remembers that, but I think a lot of these kids, and I'll call them that, who are demonstrating, they don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. When they shout things at the police, they don't have a clue of what these men did on 9/11, Bill.
That's right, and I'm sorry to say that this is what is often taught in the local schools. I mean, I was recently talking to a relative of mine, and I was shocked at what she was saying. It was right out of Karl Marx, but this is what they are often taught. And the parents are unaware that's what's being taught. And if parents try to find out what's being taught, they're called racists, and
right.
they are denounced by big city newspapers like the Boston Globe and the New York Times. I mean, there's a situation going on in Newton, Massachusetts, which is one of the most educated cities in the world, where parents began to discover some very strange things about the school system. And when they inquired, the Boston Globe denounced the parents. How
right.
dare you try to find out what's going on in the schools? You don't own the schools. Oh, yes, they do. It's called the public school. But the congruence or the intersectionality, which is the word that we're supposed to use nowadays, between the teachers' unions and the editorial boards of newspapers and the faculties of universities, it's a frightening combination. It really is. And most people, if they knew exactly what was being done, would be against it.
Absolutely. You're totally correct about that. We're going to take a little break. And we'll be back with our friend Bill right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, as we like to do on Sundays. We're chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I wanted to say one more thing about, before we go to another topic, about education and what the kids are being taught. I think I sent you an article. I don't remember it right now, but I think this week I sent you an article about the booming homeschooling business.
Yes.
How more and more parents are just simply saying, the heck with it. They're staying home. And I mean, if they're going to be home anyway, because the teachers union doesn't want to open, I might as well, you know, homeschool them myself. And this is huge because it's now getting into numbers that where it could become a real political issue. I'm really hoping that President Trump talks a lot about this and forces Joe Biden to explain why he's opposed to school choice bill.
Well, you know, it is unlikely that Joe Biden will be asked about that during the debates, because the debates, which already are beginning to infuriate me, because you know what they're going to be. I mean, the journalists are going to sit there and ask 10 questions only to the president, and repercussions will be to Joe Biden. The debates are only a few weeks away. I think about two weeks away.
Yeah.
And I found it amusing today that the Los Angeles Times, which is one of the worst papers in the liberal world, endorsed Joe Biden and Kamala Harris before even hearing the debates. And they said it's so urgent. There's such a difference between Trump and Biden, and we must have this endorsement immediately. Well, nobody really cares what the Los Angeles Times thinks, but the mentality behind that is, I don't want to know nothing. I just want my guy to win. I don't got to hear him. I don't want to know if he can go an hour against the president of the United States. We just want to endorse him. I don't know whether this is in desperation or because the polls might be changing a little bit, although not as much as I'd like to see them change. But I think the idea of a newspaper that serves a major city, which is now in crisis, so doing something as irresponsible and childish as that, which is to endorse a candidate before the debates are even held, indicates pretty much where we are.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of those endorsements, as I recall from past elections, usually happen like a week before.
Yeah.
Or even at least here in the Dallas area, the endorsement officially happens on the Sunday before the election. That's usually when they, at least the Dallas Morning News, that's when they have historically endorsed one candidate or the other. I mean, you kind of get the feeling which way they're going, but they don't formally endorse. But I think it also tells me, Bill, about the LA Times, and I didn't even know that paper was still around because they were having a lot of financial problems, as a lot of these papers are having for lots of different reasons. But maybe it shows me that how irrelevant they've become. Because any serious person looking at that endorsement says, wait a minute, 2 months before the election and you're already telling us, I mean, it's almost like they're giving away their partisanship and telling you this is the guy that we favor and this is how we're going to cover the election, Bill.
Well, basically, the Los Angeles Times it's a left-wing mouthpiece. It really doesn't serve all communities in Los Angeles. And Los Angeles probably is ready for a new newspaper. But the investment is very large. Most new newspapers fail. I don't even know if a new newspaper would get a readership. But the idea that you could endorse a presidential candidate before hearing that president debate the incumbent is ridiculous on its face. Everyone knew they were going to endorse Biden, like the New York Times is going to endorse Biden. They're not going to endorse Trump or have no endorsement. But they are presiding over a nation in crisis, and they don't seem to know it. They really don't seem to know it.
Well, they're certainly presiding over a city in crisis. I mean, LA,
of course,
is probably
LA is
about as bad off as any city in the country right now.
It's a third world country. And
that's what they tell me, people
is,
who go there.
That's exactly what it is. And by the way, speaking of California, let us go a bit north to the lovely city of San Francisco, which apparently has been turned into a slum under the current leadership. And there is a proposal up. I know this will be very exciting and will enlarge democracy in such magnificent ways, to allow 16-year-olds to vote in municipal elections. Now, a city can only allow a change in voting age for people in its jurisdiction and for officials in its jurisdiction. In other words, they won't be allowed to vote for president. But the idea of allowing a 16-year-old to vote in any election is absurd on its face. For one reason, even if that child, and it is a child, is more mature than some of the adults who are running in the election, what it will do to the high schools is unspeakable. It'll destroy the high schools. It will make them into political zones where the teachers' unions will decide what's being taught to people who are basically voters. It's a ridiculous idea. Why in the world it's coming up now in the midst of all this crisis, one wonders. But one of the things we have to be aware of is that in times of crisis, that is when the leftists really move, because people become dependent on government. And that is one of the things that we have to be very much aware of, that we assume that any administration that comes to office wants the citizenry to benefit from that administration. Not necessarily. They want the citizenry to benefit only to the extent that it votes for them again. But the more crisis, the more people turn to government out of desperation, and the more power these people get. That is
well,
the
only,
what I'm really
saying. I was going to say, Bill, that the only good news out of California is that they only have 55 electoral votes. It doesn't, you know what I mean? It's like they can get as crazy as they want to get, but all they can get is 55 electoral votes. That's all they can contribute to the final product. But, I mean, the other big issue out in California is these fires.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, you know, we knew what the explanation was going to be, climate change.
Well, yeah.
And I thought I would really recommend to the reader, to the listeners, and I think, I don't know if you saw this article, Bill, Monica Showalter over at the American Thinker wrote a really thoughtful, and she lives out in California, and wrote a very thoughtful piece about blaming climate change for this. And she says, you know, it's interesting, and I'm paraphrasing Monica, who's a wonderful, just a wonderful journalist. And she was saying, it's interesting that these fires occur in, you know, around in California, but they don't occur in Mexico, which is right across the border. And that part of Mexico right across the border has huge forests because a lot of their industry for furniture and stuff like that comes out of that region. And I know this for my own personal reasons because I've done some business with some of those companies that make manufacture that use, you know, the woodlands of the north of Mexico. They're not having that problem in Mexico. They're not seeing these crazy fires out of control. And Monica was explaining that it has a lot to do with, you know, the policies that they've used to clean up the areas. And apparently in Mexico, they allow you to pick up the old wood, if you will. So, but in California, you cannot do that. And you have this wood sitting there, and at a moment's notice, it can turn into a fire, Bill.
It turns into kindlewood. Absolutely.
Yes, that's
absolutely.
It.
I was talking to someone about that just today, that there apparently their forestry rooms in California are heavily influenced by environmental fanatics, such as those from the Sierra Club, and they are not based on common sense. These rules often make it impossible for them, for example, to cut down certain areas to separate them from other areas so that a fire could not spread quickly. But, oh, no, no, you must not cut down one tree. Now, apparently that's the rule. And you're quite right about the wood. The forests are supposed to be kept clean under good forestry rules. The forest is cleaned, not of any refuse that humans leave, but rather of the normal refuse of nature. When twigs and branches fall, when leaves fall, they become the material for a fire, and it makes the fire spread much more quickly. And yeah, no, nature must be left alone. Well, apparently between that and other rules in California, Northern California has electrical shortages now and blackouts, part of that being due to, quote, environmental rules. Well, I wonder how many people fall and are seriously injured in blackouts or have auto accidents in blackouts. You know, this is government gone amok. Governor Newsom has shown himself to be – when he first came into office, he seemed pretty reasonable for a leftist, but now he's gone crazy. You may know that today or was it yesterday he signed into law a bill that lowers the penalties for sex offenders. My God, I mean, where's his liberal base?
Right.
I thought that they really are very concerned about sex offenders. Apparently not, because apparently
no.
there's a big sex offender constituency out there. Apparently,
there must be because all of us. I mean, they were all against domestic violence until the police tried to arrest somebody in Kenosha. And now the guy who got arrested in Kenosha, I mean, the reason the police were after this guy is because some girlfriend called that she was afraid for her life. And now
That's
this
right.
guy it has become the new hero of the left, even Kamala Harris saying that she was proud of him. Really?
Yes.
Really? Proud of him?
He has a terrible record. He has a violent record.
Yes.
Well, Kamala Harris, I have to tell you, I don't know what she does. I mean, is she on unemployment? She could qualify. Is she out there? I mean, she has absolutely become invisible. And
right. Well, they keep
the
showing her with tennis shoes, Bill. Apparently, the media is really interested in her tennis shoes.
Yes, I'm sure. Now, apparently,
I mean, those are the pictures they keep saying. Kamala Harris shows up in these fancy tennis shoes, And I'm saying, well, wait a minute, does she play basketball or is she running for president? But the media are just madly in love with her tennis shoes, Bill.
Yes. Now, apparently Kamala made a trip to Miami and she apparently didn't understand that Miami, she went to Hispanic voters, she went to Jewish voters, she went to some other voters, but apparently she didn't realize that Miami has a Haitian population. Now, she is part Caribbean, and
yes,
presumably
yes.
She would have known that. Oh, she did know one expression. I think it's the Haitian for what's going on or what's happening. Yeah. It was,
yeah.
She apparently used it a few times, and she thought that was her appeal to the Haitian vote. And apparently there's a great deal of anger in the Haitian community because she kind of snubbed them. And,
yes.
go ahead.
Well, what's interesting in southern Florida, what's interesting in Florida is that state is moving toward Trump. And the move, of course, not surprisingly, is coming because of strong Cuban support for Trump. But also the Venezuelans who have become citizens are also strongly supporting Trump. So I think Trump will win Florida, which is of course a major player on election day. But Bill, I wanted to talk a little bit about the election, less than 60 days away, and I have a feeling that between now and the election, that every week there's going to be a new book. I'm anticipating that The Atlantic will soon write a story based on people familiar with the situation saying that when Trump was 15, he beat up a 13-year-old girl who happened to
yes.
be black, which, of course, confirms
yes.
that Trump is a racist.
Yes.
And so from now until then, I understand there's lots of books coming out. But I want to make a larger point, Bill, and then I want to get your thoughts on this. I think that in many ways, I'll speak for myself. I've gotten to the point I don't even take these books seriously anymore. And these articles, I don't even take them seriously. Because I know what they are. I know what the intention is. The Bob Woodward book, I guess he was on 60 Minutes today. I didn't see it. But the Woodward books in the past, when they're promoted, they are promoted in a certain way. And then when people read the book, they go, oh, really? I thought the book was going to tell me that, but it didn't tell me that. So I wonder how effective, if any, these books or articles are, Bill. I don't think they are very effective in changing votes. They are effective in the sense that they give, if you hate Trump, now you've got another book and you've got another article. But I don't think it's changing any votes, Bill.
Well, I agree with you. I think the public is on to a lot of this. I think the public is generally much smarter than journalists and college professors think they are. You know, the point has been made many times in political history that in the 1936 election, virtually all the major publishers in the United States were Republicans. And yet Roosevelt won the election in a landslide. And I think that people kind of discount, the newspaper owners. They were discounting them even then. And today, I do believe every survey shows that the public mistrusts the press. I don't think these books have that much impact because basically – very few people read them. I mean, even if a book sells 50,000 copies, this is a nation of 330 million people, it is selling them probably to people who already agree with what's in the book. I don't think if you are a Biden supporter that you're going to read a book critical of Joe Biden. So
right.
I don't think they make much of a difference. And I think people are on to the idea of publishing a book around election time. Somebody did actually ask Bob Woodward a very important question. When Woodward accused Trump in the book of not being up on the virus when it first broke out here, and he lost time, people asked, well, if you knew this from months ago, why did you wait for an election to report it? Why didn't you report it immediately? I don't recall what answer Woodward gave, but that's a good question for any author. Why did you wait for 3 weeks before an election to write your book? Even the book that was written by one of his nieces has failed to make any real impact, saying
right.
that Trump was a meanie or he didn't give me enough money or whatever it was. I have no doubt there's plenty in Trump's background that is negative, but there are plenty of things in Biden's background that are also negative, including the fact that he has been wrong on every major issue of the time in foreign policy. And that's
right.
important to me. I always feel that foreign policy is the first issue to be dealt with. You know, there's an old expression in politics, you can take 4 years of a bad domestic policy, but 4 years of a bad foreign policy can kill you. And
that's right.
I don't think the reporters take that seriously enough.
No, I don't think they do. But to me, if you look at in the last 3 or 4 years, a number of books that have been written about President Trump, it seems like every couple of weeks somebody is writing a book about him, about what a rotten person he is, how bad he is, and all of that. And as you said, and my friends in the audience know that I did not support President Trump in the primaries because I had problems with him as well. But he's been an excellent president, in my opinion. He's done some wonderful things. He has done some very substantial things as president of the United States. And we're going to talk about these agreements that he's got in the Middle East here in a minute. So the guy has been very effective as a president. And, yes, his personality sometimes will drive you nuts. I mean, I don't even know why he sat down with Bob Woodward. I really don't. I mean, I think he should have known that Woodward writes these books. He wrote one about George W. Bush. He wrote one about his father. Woodward is not exactly coming clean to the table here. So why he gave him an interview, I don't know. But at the end of I think when everybody actually reads the book that just came out, what they're going to say is that all there is? I mean, really? Is that all there is? And the fact that he held the book for the question or the recording for 7 months, Bill, it's because he wasn't going to sell any books in February, but he's selling them now. But I think you're right. These books don't have any influence because after a while, it's like the boy who cries wolf. How many more times can you tell people that Donald Trump is horrible and terrible and horrible? I mean, you reach a point where people say, okay, you've told me 30,000 times. Now explain your foreign policy to me. You see what I mean? So I think this is counterproductive, Bill.
I agree with you. I agree. And you know, I think one of the first rules of journalism that is being violated more and more every day is you cannot tell people they don't see what they actually see. I'm reminded of that stand-up news piece that CNN did a couple of weeks ago, or maybe more than that, where the reporter was saying the most really peaceful protest, and behind him is a police precinct burning. Just the appearances of that, the lack of common sense. And I think that they really don't realize that the very images that they show contradict the positions the reporters are taking. These are violent protests. The question is, if they're peaceful protests, would you like to come and join one of them and stroll downtown with your children while this is going on? I don't think so.
No.
I really don't. We in New York now have regular demonstrations put on by some organization that says they're going to demonstrate until Election Day. They're going to block traffic. They're going to break windows in stores, and very little is done about it.
That's right. Well, the media, I think it was the Attorney General who was criticizing the media for the way they're covering these protests because, you know, I wonder how much coverage this story last night about the people shouting outside the hospital, hoping that these two policemen would die. I wonder how much coverage that's gotten. Probably not a lot.
Probably not much. They'll say, there were some protesters at the hospital, but only a small number. we know what side they're on. I love these people who say that most of the protesters, the Black Lives Matter protesters, are peaceful, and yes, and most of the people living in Nazi Germany were not members of the Nazi Party. You know, it doesn't take that many to create a catastrophe. And
no.
I just feel that we may have a real catastrophe coming. And what is so shocking also is the ability of the left to really mobilize small amounts of people, and yet they have influence. We had. I'll give you an example. We had the 9/11 ceremony here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that for years the political left in New York has been trying to infiltrate into the organizations that deal with 9/11, especially the commemorative organizations, because they want the history written their way.
Right.
You know, I mean, they want their two bits in there. the military was going to do a flyover, which is the standard American salute, a flyover. Everyone mm-hmm. loves them. New York, people in New York said, or the people who were interviewed said, that's crazy. It's so insensitive. What's it sensitive about it? We
right.
do flyovers over funerals all the time. It's a sign of respect. It now turns out that the rejection of it came from City Hall, from the mayor's office. That doesn't wow. surprise me one bit. He was probably appalled at how welcome the Thunderbirds and Blue Angels were recently when they flew over New York. And
yeah,
he didn't want to have to go through.
And those were great scenes, if you remember,
great
people in the hospitals, you know, waving at these
oh, yes.
planes. Going by. Well, Bill, one of the things that a couple of stories I want to touch on here is, first of all, apparently the left now wants to do away with the Nobel Peace because they've nominated Donald Trump. And I'm pretty sure that it's only a matter of time before we hear that whatever Mr. Nobel's name was. Was it Alfred? Yeah.
Alfred,
I'm pretty sure
yeah.
we'll hear that Alfred Nobel was a gun manufacturer who...
Well, he was. He was a dynamite. He actually invented dynamite.
Exactly. So I'm sure we'll hear that and saying that, you know, how can you dare give a peace prize based after a man who invented dynamite or whatever? And it just shows you how silly these people are. These are great achievements by President Trump. You know, when President Carter, I don't want to go off too much on this, but when President Carter had... was it Egypt and Israel signed
Israel.
That agreement? Or yeah. I mean, I saluted that. I said, well done, Mr.
Carter.
Well done.
Of course.
Because it benefits everybody.
To the extent that they cover it at all, they make it into a minor thing. It's one reporter said, well, he's good at getting these dictators to sign these agreements. If it were Obama, they'd be going on for 3 weeks about what a peacemaker he was. Obama got the Nobel Peace Prize after 2 days in office. I'm not even sure they knew which phone number to call to tell him. You know, I mean, it was a ridiculous thing. So I don't think he's going to get the Nobel Peace Prize because the international left will make it impossible. But yet, if he comes up with a couple of more of these things, I don't see how they can turn him down. I really
don't.
Yeah,
I mean, these are great achievements. You and I have been around long enough to know what a problem the Middle East has been. I mean, it's been a problem for every president that I can remember, going back to Lyndon Johnson, the president I remember, the first one I remember, going back to Lyndon Johnson to Donald Trump, the Middle East has always been a problem for the United States. And to get these kinds of agreements, you got to hand it to President Trump, but people are already, what is it, the Atlantic magazine? Maybe this was a satire by Babylon Bee, I'm not sure. So maybe it was not true, but I think it was Babylon Bee was I think it was Babylon Bee was saying that the Atlantic wanted to do away with the Nobel Peace Prize because it was based on anonymous sources or something like that or whatever.
Well, the Nobel Peace Prize traditionally has been something of a joke. I mean, it is not
yes.
given in Stockholm. Where the other Nobel Prizes are given. It's given in Oslo. And yes, it was set up by Alfred Nobel because he invented dynamite. I think somebody apparently suggested to him or proposed to him that he have a peace prize to counteract the notion that he was involved in war work or military work. And so it was set up. It is not screened the way the other Nobels are. The Nobel Prize in the sciences are very carefully given. And they are, I think, all certainly deserved. When you get into things like the Peace Prize, how much peace was actually achieved by any of these people? The answer is not much. And they have made some real dud mistakes in the past by giving Nobel Prizes to dictators. They also give prizes in things like literature. And, these are so subjective that they really are meaningless. The Peace Prize is noted only because it's given, but it hasn't contributed anything to peace. However, I think that if Trump is nominated for it, well, he has been nominated for it,
yes.
the publicity alone will be very heavy on the givers of the Nobel Peace Prize, but they're going to get pressures from both sides. They're going to get pressures from the side that says you must recognize the man's achievement. He has actually brought peace in certain areas, but the other side is going to say the party line does not allow you to give the Nobel Peace Prize to Donald Trump. I think it will be
hilarious, Bill, if he does win the prize, that they present it to him in wherever they present it to him, and that all of the previous winners have to be there. So there he will be with President Obama on the same stage.
And Carter, receiving
the... They never gave it to George W. Bush or Ronald Reagan, who probably did more for peace than Barack Obama did in eight years.
They didn't give it to President Reagan or to John Paul II, but they gave it to Gorbachev. They gave it to Gorbachev, the communist.
And that's right. And wasn't the guy from the Palestine, the guy who he dies every year?
Yasser Arafat. Yeah.
Didn't he get it also?
Yes, he got it. He got it. Begin got it. Henry Kissinger got it. They were giving them out. But the fact is, it's meaningless except for the prestige, and many of the Nobel Peace Prize winners aren't even known to the public. They were given, you know, to the head of an organization for peaceful bicycling, or for contributions to peace among chess clubs, things like that.
Well, I've always felt the best candidates for...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was going to say the best candidates for the Peace Prize, for the Nobel Peace Prize, are usually activists against oppression or repression. I would give it to all the protesters in Hong Kong this year for the...
Sure, absolutely.
That is, in my opinion, a justified prize. But a lot of the other stuff we've seen over the years is a joke. One last thing I wanted to mention, Bill, tonight is they're doing some digging up. I don't know who's digging up this information, but apparently some of the contributions going to Act Blue are potentially coming from strange people, Bill.
Yes, the contributions apparently to this, which is a Democratic organization, some ridiculously high percentage of the contributors listed themselves as unemployed. Now, apparently, there are certain contributions in certain areas where you have to list who made the contribution and what the person's background is. I don't know what the law is on it, but it was noticed immediately that how can all these people give these big contributions if they're unemployed? Well, apparently, it turns out, some may be legitimate. If you're a homemaker, you don't have to list an employer, apparently. If you're retired, you don't have to list an employer. But the number is so enormous as a part of the whole that they suspect that a lot of these contributions came from overseas. That could be a very embarrassing problem for Joe Biden. But let's see if anybody picks it up.
Let's see if anybody will ask him about it. I just thought, Bill, when I saw that they were unemployed, I thought, well, maybe these are just lottery ticket winners. Who decided to, people who won the lottery, who decided to give money to Act Blue. But, well, the race is 60 days away. We didn't get into a lot of that. But the way I look at it right now, Bill, is that it's kind of a dead heat if you look at a lot of the polls. Probably not much is going to happen until after the first debate. I think this first debate is going to be very important for both candidates. And that's why I'm not spending a lot of time looking at the polling data, because I think it'll change that night one way or the other. It could be decisive one way or the other, Bill. I know that you don't have a lot of time to answer for a minute or so, but do you agree with me that the first debate is going to be key?
It might be. I think Biden is going to pull a fast one. First of all, he might not debate. It is possible they can roll the dice and say Trump is not worth debating and hope that the public will go along with that. That is possible if he's in very bad physical shape. Or he can pull a device that he is already using. He can simply memorize answers to general questions, and no matter what question is asked, he will have some kind of general answer for it. And because the questioners are almost certainly going to be liberals, they won't challenge him on it. That's an old technique. You don't answer the question that's asked. You answer the question you wish was asked. And sometimes you get away with it, and he could come out quite well.
Well, what if somebody's holding the teleprompter and they mess it up, Bill?
Well, that is the big thing, is whether – well, he can always write things in the palm of his hand the way kids do. and just not show his
head. That's right. Well, maybe he shows up at the wrong place, Bill. Maybe he shows up at the wrong university.
Well, I
don't know. He might.
He might,
you never
but
know. But I think you're right. They may just decide not to have a debate and say, no, we're not going to debate. And by the way, most newspapers will probably agree with him on that.
Yes, that's the thing. He will have the press behind him, and they may roll the dice because he's obviously in poor shape. I mean, just listen to the sound of his voice. It's weak. It's the voice of an old man, older than he really. And and they now have caught him using a teleprompter at press conferences, obviously to read pre-written answers, you know,
right.
Answers to the general question. You know, all politicians learn that technique of not answering the question by answering a question. And it's just that they're answering a different question. And
yeah, I just don't know that he's. I don't know that he's quick enough on his feet to do that. I mean, I know what you're saying, that he'll memorize some answers or have some 3x5 cards in front of him saying, okay, if they ask you about this, you say that. But I'm not sure he's and I don't say this in any critical way, because I don't like to make fun of people who may have a problem like he does. But he may not be quick enough. And if Trump really starts getting into him, which Trump will, well, it could be interesting. But we'll probably talk about that the next time. Bill, thank you as always for your time, and it was really entertaining tonight. We had a great show, and I look forward to our next one.
Absolutely. Well, we'll have plenty to talk about next week.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you as always for your time, and keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda. We enjoy checking it every day.
Well, thank you, Sylvia. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, I mentioned Urgent Agenda. As you know, that's Bill's website, and there's a link to it on the show information. But follow it. He's always has a lot of interesting coverage of the news at his website. Plus, he's got a great sense of humor. I think you can tell that if you listen to our show. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.